I'm a curator. I'm not a career museum director. And even though I studied anthropology, I did it after I'd studied contemporary art. I only did it because of conceptual art and actionism. I'd studied art in Vienna in the late 70s, and at the time, everybody read anthropology, ethno-psychoanalysis. It was the thing to read. Kossuth had done anthropology, Susan Hiller, there was Lothar Baumgarten in Germany, there was loads of stuff happening, and you'd certainly, at the time in the early 80s, you didn't study art history. That came much, much later, this sort of renaissance of art history in relationship to art practice. That's my argument, anyway. When I finished my PhD, I realized that I wanted to be a curator. And for me, curating was working in tandem with artists. There are curators who are very good at setting up historical exhibitions. There are others that adore doing biennials. There are some that work particularly well with dead artists. And I think that if there's any area in which I'm proficient, it's in the early phases of artistic production. It's in what I call the prelusive. It's everything that leads into a final work. The fact that I work with a laboratory in the Weltkultur, or that I'm interested in projects like Future Academy or publishing organs like Metronome, which I did for 11 years, is that I want to try and create connecting mechanisms between artists who are working in different locations in a very interdisciplinary context. And I need to find a way institutionally for this to take place. Now, I say institutionally, but I use the term carefully. I mean, I work in a museum, but in the past I was always independent. So I would create a new model, a new idea, and I would want to test it out somewhere, and I would look for an institution under whose umbrella I could maybe experiment. For a long time, I worked in art colleges. I never taught, but I set up research projects with artists and students, often moving between different art colleges at one time, across Scandinavia or across Europe. And again, I realized that if you want to work internationally, you want to, in my case, I wanted to create a professional curiosity between artists. This today is very different to, say, in the early 90s and even in the beginning of the year 2000, when there were far less websites, there was no email, there was no telephones, there was nothing. So very often, collectives of artists, laboratories, and emergent networks would allow information to be passed on that was actually backstage. And this is what interests me. Even within the museum, I need a backstage area. That's what the laboratory is, because I'm interested in production with artists. So the question is, where, number one, do artists and curators find interlocutors today? And secondly, where can they produce? It's not interesting to believe that the art world today is a kind of bulimic, market-driven series of hyper-populist venues and institutions. That doesn't get us anywhere. It's much more interesting to say, okay, who can I talk with? And what kind of medium, what kind of platform, what kind of situation do I have to develop as a curator in order for a production to develop for which I don't need to actually hold the strings or hold the reins on entirely? I was in my office one day, and a group of young women came to visit the museum. They were being taken round the back, shown the different offices and the library and everything. And outside my office is a very beautiful sculpture from the 80s by a Ugandan sculptor called Frances Ntaganda. And I love her. I think she's great, and I call her Miss Kampala, big, massive wooden sculpture. The woman, who's about 16, is standing outside of my office, and I show her the sculpture, and I say what she thinks of it, and she sort of nods and likes it, but isn't really sure. And I say it's from Kampala. She doesn't know where Kampala is. I say that's Uganda, what used to be called the Pearl of Africa. And she looks at me, and in a very determined way, she says, you know, I don't need to know about Uganda. I know a lot more about South Baghdad. So I realized at that point, it was early on in my directorship, that there was a huge hiatus. between the geopolitics of the time when these objects were collected and even their kind of populist, if you like, brief, what they were meant to do for people in 1900 who would visit the museum, and the people today who really, do they really want to know about New Guinea? Do they really want to know about the Congo in the same way? Yes, you could say they do. There are issues which connect people today. It could, for example, be a question around AIDS. It could be the question around all kinds of issues that are affecting the way we live today. But to make that happen through a recontextualization of these objects is extremely important. And I don't think it can be done from within the museum. I think we need to bring in people from the outside to provide the channels and the remediation process to make these objects relevant in 2014. So I think if you have a sick museum, it can't be healed from within. It would be impossible. It would just fester within its own knowledge, within its own discursive system. Whereas if you bring other people in, sure, they can be accused of being dilettantes. Sure, that you can say, oh, it's just a bunch of artists again. But actually, what they do is worm their way, irrigate something that has become absolutely stagnant. I work in a city which has an extraordinarily high amount of museums for the amount of people who live in it. Frankfurt is attracts an international group of people who come to work, who live for 5 to 15 years in the city. And one of the attractive points of the city are the different museums. And these museums inevitably conform to a kind of a hierarchy. So the most attractive museums are the most dynamic, the most populist, the most, if you like, bring in the most money, have the most support from the bourgeoisie. And the Weltkulturen Museum is, because it was very dormant, kind of anesthetized, I'd say, for so many years, is very low on the rung of museums in Frankfurt. When I got there, I was perhaps more idealist than I am today. I believed that it would make sense to make out of this museum probably the most important museum in an international city like Frankfurt. How could it not be? It seemed logical that it wouldn't be a museum of German history painting that would be the most dominant museum or the most interesting museum, but that it might be the Weltkulturen Museum. Because it would reflect the discrepancies between identifications today. It would reflect the sort of the negotiation that's necessary between a colonial past and the changes and mutations and transformations that have taken place in the world. And the objects, obviously, the collection would be at the center of this. In the last 4.5 years, I've realized that, generally speaking, ethnographic museums are not only in Frankfurt, but everywhere, quite low down the hierarchy. This has to do, obviously, with how they present themselves, but it also has to do with a sort of blind spot in the consciousness of the colonial past in Germany, a blind spot that is often reasoned by, if you ask somebody a question like, oh, what about German colonialism? What can you tell me about it? Very often they'll say, or they've said to me, it was only 30 years, maybe in Namibia or a bit in Samoa or a little bit in New Guinea. But it's very hard to get a clear picture of how many colonies they were and where and for how long and what the effects were. Germany was very late in the colonial race for scramble for Africa and other, it came in at the very end of the 19th century. However, Germany was a major trader already in the 15th century. And so the, or 16th century, so the connection to other cultures in Germany, and that's why Frankfurt is interesting too, has come out of trading relationships. A lot of it's impossible to discuss the difficulty of positioning an ethnographic museum against a Jewish or Holocaust museum. It would be extremely difficult to talk about that. But it is clear that the recent past is, for the majority of people in Germany, a much more crucial area that needs to be looked at and discussed and debated. What we've tried to do in the current exhibition, which is called Foreign Exchange, or The Stories You Wouldn't Tell a Stranger, and which runs until the 4th of January 2015, is we've tried to unearth an aspect, dimensions of this colonial past. And we've done it by looking at the relationship between trade, colonialism, and anthropology. And as we started working on it a year ago, or over a year ago, we came across boxes of photographs, very problematic photographs that had been taken by the founding director of the museum. And when you look at this kind of material, you realize that a kind of scientistic foundation that would was developed in Germany, that later becomes, if you like, the basis for extreme racism and under National Socialism. So we could then just look a little bit at the landscape of these museums. I was brought up in London, and in London, when I was small, there was the Museum of Mankind. I can't tell you the exact date, but approximately 12 years ago, 15 years ago, it was closed. It used to be at Burlington Gardens, behind the Royal Academy of Arts. And the reason that was given was that at last these ethnographic objects were going to become part of the art museum, part of the British Museum. But one of the reasons why it was closed was also that fewer and fewer people came. And there was a sort of frumpiness to the exhibitions that were done by the in-house anthropologists. And you can imagine a sort of turquoise Hessian for an Aztec exhibition, or you can imagine sand-colored walls and constructions that felt slightly out of date and not really up to the kind of developing curatorial expectations. So in London, you now have, again, hundreds of thousands of ethnographic objects which aren't being seen, but you have the Sainsbury Room for African Art, the Wellcome Trust rooms. You have a display in the British Museum itself. I don't get the impression that a lot of research is being done within the ethnographic department at the museum. I might be wrong. But if you like, in London, in any case, apart from a small museum called the Horniman Museum, the question of the ethnographic museum is no longer really present. There is the Sainsbury Centre in Norwich, and there are departments in Manchester, etc. But it doesn't really, the ethnographic museum doesn't feature as it does, for example, in Germany. In France, you have, in Paris, you have the Musée du Quai Branly. Musée du Quai Branly is enormously successful. I can't give you the exact amount of people who visit it, but we're talking about, you know, in the million, the range of a million, of several million. It has a huge budget. It is very active and in a very interesting way, because on the one hand, it runs an exhibition program along the lines of a television. So it's just been described to me as an arte of exhibition making. On the other hand, it has a scientific arm, which is run by Frédéric Keck, and it has postdoctoral students, and it has a kind of a very serious, in fact, it's funded half from culture and half from science. There are queues and queues outside for the exhibitions, and it is a very multicultural audience. You may not like the interior. I'm not a great fan of the scenography, of the design of the museum, but you can't deny that it's working. In Germany, there's a big attempt to create the Humboldt Forum, which is a highly contested new museum that is yet to be built on the site of the former Prussian castle. And it's going through endless problems because nobody really wants to deal with the question of a of a person-led institution. So the merging of three museums in order to create this world culture mega museum is very difficult. And at the end of the day, I think it will fall into the hands of designers. In other words, designers who will then determine how people can look at these objects. And I would like to be hopeful about the Humboldt Forum, but I don't think many people are.